for different reasons.
Love Talk Radio.
There's glory in the legends of this hard muscle life, and there's poetry in each season made of sweat and strife. Winds whisper of high hopes, victory is in the skies. A season awaits with glory in her eyes. Pro football is a game, not a war. It's for win or lose, not life or death. But say that in the summer, for winter brings the playoffs and a season is at stake.
Now from here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. About this one, Michael, is this was written back like in the late 80s when they first made it to the playoffs.
Okay.
And that year, the Super Bowl happened to be being played in Miami.
Okay.
And of course, which of course, now when I started playing it again back in 09, guess what Super Bowl played? So.
Right.
Not this year though. I don't know where is this Minnesota this year.
Yeah, Minnesota. Yeah, Vikings fans are terrified that Green Bay will go. They don't want them to
play. I know how they feel.
Oh, man.
Welcome, welcome, everyone. is clobbering time indeed back in the football business? Well, it looks like it at least tonight, that's for sure. Because I wouldn't be doing this by myself like I used to on football or anything, but I got a scholarly gentleman here who knows his football, and he's always a great co-pilot, whether we're geeking it out on other things, all things geek. And I did not tell Tex we were on tonight. Maybe he'll catch on. If not, I'll tell him later.
Okay.
Or where's football? Because, you know, again, Tex likes to differentiate the numbering of the show. You know, this is Clobbering Time number 611, but he likes to specialize the numbers that are football from and lump it into a certain little category. But I don't, because we're geeking out on football, and it's all geek to me.
Well, that's it. I mean, passionate fandom is passionate fandom, whether it's, anime or it's genre television or it's football. Hell, you know, we'd undoubtedly have Matt and I'm thinking a couple of other guys if this were a hockey show, although I don't know the first thing about hockey.
But if I did, I would do a hockey show for them because it would be fun. They know their stuff on there. So
does New Orleans presently have a hockey team? Just curiously.
No, not even close. Not even a semi team.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Just wondered.
A semi for a few years, many decades ago, Baton Rouge should have a semi team, but
Okay.
No hockey for us. But what we do have is a something of a pro football team that has a decent year every now and then.
Right.
And do. And so here we are the night before week one. And everyone, this, of course, Clobbering Time does come at you from the Baxter Building basement on the Grenache Network and on Blog Talk Radio. And just wanted to let you know, weeknights, it's all about the geekness. And it's all about the Possum Hour, 10 p.m. Eastern, Monday nights. Please join. Hey, look, if you like crazy, outrageous, eclectic recordings and just an insane chat room, like, then your show is Possum Hour with Decker and Gumby and the gang again. And they are on, again, 10 p.m. Eastern, Monday nights, and sometimes even on Friday nights with Possum Hour Overload there. So check them out. Here on the, again, Blog Talk Radio's Grenache Network. Just go look for the Grenache Network, find Possum Hour there. And, again, I'm trying to get back into the groove, not only just with this doing this football show, but doing at least one geek show a week now. I missed last week because I went to, on a trip and everything. But here we are this week. I'm hoping, and this is tentative. If it doesn't happen this week, it will be next week. I'm going to have my good buddy, my retro-blasting pal, Michael French, on. We're going to talk about we're going to talk about The Empire Strikes Back Revisited, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. But we'll let you know all about it later. It's a wonderful new how do you even describe it? It would take too long.
Is this the guy adding special effects and sets and costumes and new shots?
Yes.
I've
worked on it for years.
Yeah, I've always been curious as to how that's all going to play out. I mean, it's obviously a labor of love for the guy.
It's beautiful. I mean, what the job he did on it made me want to cry almost. I was like, I can't believe and again, it's hard to really explain. I don't know if you saw Star Wars Revisited, but he worked on it for 10 years, Empire. Even when I was saying, like, man, I don't know what you need to do to Empire. You don't need to do anything to it.
Right.
And he was, and he doesn't use the special edition except for like one or two shots. So that's good. Just forget some of the crazy things he added that are really fun. The color alone, dude. Anyone can download this, by the way. This is a free thing. It's not someone bootlegging or making money off of Star Wars. Anyone who's ever – all he's ever said is all he asks that you've bought a Star Wars videotape or DVD once in your life, and you can go to this thing and download it for free, a Blu-ray of it or the DVD of it, download it onto a thumb drive or whatever. It's the most beautiful copy of Star Wars or Empire, in this case, that I have ever seen. What he did with the colors. It's just astonishing. And, of course – in addition to that, yes, he rebuilt a lot of sets. He reshot and not only color corrected, but corrected many effects and things like that. It was so elaborate. For years would go by, and I would ask Michael, "So is he still messing around with Empire?" And he was like, "Yes, it's amazing the detail and the dedication he's putting into this." And Michael's the ultimate. I mean, there's nobody. He's the one I defer to. Empire Strikes Back is my favorite film, but no one knows that film better than Michael French, and it blew him away. And now I've been watching it, and I can't stop. I keep like stopping and going back and looking at different things,
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's incredible. But we're here for football tonight. So and incidentally, we're going to have Michael on hopefully next week, and we're going to talk about all that. He's going to tell us everything we need to know about The Empire Strikes Back Revisited. In the meantime, though, go visit retroblasting.com for all the info about our amazing retroblasting buddies in there. And, of course, their YouTube channel. You can go do that or go to their YouTube channel. Do both and go take a look at them. And if you're looking to get in touch with us, if you're listening out there on the feeds or you pick this up somewhere else, you can contact me and even my good buddy Michael Shoemaker here if you have a question for him, if you heard the show. Just go to the Clobbering Times Baxter Building Basement Facebook group and ask away or call us names or whatever. So we like either. We're fine with either. We're very casual.
Absolutely. We're friendly people for the most part.
Right. We're fine with abuse. It's okay.
Yeah.
maybe we're Saints and Bears fans. We can take abuse.
That's it.
I figured also we have a little fun after we talk a little bit about what's going on. We'll have a little fun picking the games. I thought that might be a good. I always enjoyed we'll have a little picking contest and see who can if you're game for that sort of thing, Michael. A little friendly competition there.
I'm looking at my picks as we speak, so I'm ready for when that segment comes up.
I will do mine on the fly. I mean, I'll give them, and we'll go with the honor school. I certainly thought the Patriots were going to beat the Chiefs, so you can put me down for one loss right there.
Well, you know, that one I have excluded from the overall pick total since I hadn't planned on doing it, and since I would have picked the Chiefs to win by at least 14 points, and of course I'm full of crap too. But, given that it's not exactly a mulligan, it's just one of those that, like, as far as I'm concerned, the picks game begins tonight as opposed to earlier.
We'll do it that way. But like I said, if you said I picked the Chiefs, I picked the Chiefs to play tough, a close game where something weird could happen because of an opening night fluke and then winning in a weird way. But the way they did, you know.
They dominated. And right. That's I know I posted, what I'm about to say, you've seen me posted in written form on your thread on your Facebook page. But it was pretty clear from the get-go what the entire football world thought would happen. And I think they kind of overreacted to the comeback win in the Super Bowl, which, let's both be honest about that. The Falcons never should have lost that game. That was a colossal choke job on the part of the coaches to run some really dumb plays toward the end of
those
the game.
Those coaches should have been fired.
Yes, absolutely. Especially, I don't think that they are really actually at a disadvantage. I mean, their offensive system obviously works, but the play calls were terrible. And I don't know that they are actually weaker as a result of losing their offensive coordinator the way they did. They might actually be in better shape as far as that goes. So I think that people coming into this, you know, it was just the hype train. You know, it was just, the Patriots are unstoppable, this indomitable dynasty, and Tom Brady will play until he gets his ARP card and past that, you know. And then, I mean, he did not look good at all. He did not look in sync at all with his offense. And here's the thing that I noticed about the game, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, but for one thing, coming into a game like that, the knock on Alex Smith, and it's why they drafted Mahomes, is because he's not really thought of as an explosive quarterback. You know, he is a check down game manager kind of guy for the most part.
Right.
He keeps your game, he keeps your team in it, but they have a good defense, a very good defense. And so, especially with a guy like Lamar Houston, I mean, oh my God, you know, that guy's a beast. With their defense and a safe offense, you know, that's how they get to the playoffs. But they figured that, well, the weakness must be Alex Smith. And I think he answered a lot of questions because, you know, when you saw the Patriots, most of the time that I was noticing what they were doing on defense, they were rushing three and putting everything back in coverage. They were forcing Alex Smith to beat them. And he beat them. I mean, he didn't just beat them. He made throws, especially downfield throws, that I don't know that – I mean, except for sporadically, we haven't seen him make. And they clearly just did not respect his chances of actually guiding the Kansas City offense to points based off of big plays and based off of, you know, the kinds of passes that they drafted Mahomes to make. You know, and it's not that Smith lacks the arm. It's just that you just get the impression that whether it's the coaches or his own approach, he played it safe. Well, he didn't play it safe, and the Patriots never adjusted their defense. I mean, they only sent a blitz occasionally to try to rattle him, and they never got home because the Chiefs' offensive line did an exceptional job. I mean, Smith had an amazing pocket to work out of. You know, he was able to scan the field, go through his progressions, and he was mostly unbothered. You know, conversely, Brady was harassed pretty much all night. I expected him to get up after a few of the hits he took, yelling, "Don't you know who I am?" I mean, seriously, you know, and given the way the refs were spraying flags all over the field for, you know, against the Chiefs and for the Patriots, you know, I'm not a big conspiracy guy, and I know that they were just doing their job for real, but you're sitting there thinking, oh, come on, they've already got to contend with, you know, the team they're playing. Do they have to fight the Zebras too? You know, that just goes through your mind. You can't help it. I mean, we both know it's kind of like when Michael Jordan played basketball. They weren't going to call him for traveling when he was going down the middle of the court up for one of his, you know, patented, dunks or layups or whatever have you. I mean, they let him get away with a bunch. And anytime a player guarded him a little bit too closely, they got fouled. You know, it was never going to be borderline with him. He was their superstar. He was the guy who drove ratings. And the officiating, just, it was no coincidence that he got the protection, I guess you'd say, that he got. And in this league, it's like the announcers kind of even admit from time to time, if you're like a rookie receiver and you push off a little bit, you're not going to get the same latitude that a veteran is going to get in that instance.
Right.
Same with defensive backs. You know, you go down the list. And so you just wish robots were officiating the game. You know, you wish that completely objective androids were out there and that there was just
right.
absolutely no way there's funny business. But that's just one of those unspoken dynamics.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, a little bit about there too. This is a strange dichotomy about the Patriots going into any season. It's weird because on paper there's something like maybe 10, something's crazy like 10 and 12 on opening day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 10 and 2 on opening day, something like
right.
that. Since the, or is it like 12? Something, they almost never lose an opening day, basically.
Right, right.
But they also almost never really play that well early in the beginning of the season either.
Yeah, sure, sure. I mean,
they never really dominate that much in the beginning of the season.
I'm not sure if, the season where they went basically 18-1, where they lost
right.
the Super Bowl to the Giants, they came out, if I recall correctly, you know, they had Randy Moss. They had an offense that verged on being unstoppable. And they I think they kind of came out hot that year. But you're right. I mean, you can't write them off because, as many people have pointed out, you know, in week four a couple of years ago, the Chiefs roughed them up 41-14 in week four. But at the same time, at some point, it's not going to be a fluke. And that's the thing that I think everybody is on watch for. At some point, every dynasty declines. And Brady can only play so long, as the old
right.
saying goes, father time is undefeated when it comes to...
He looked a little whipped the other night.
And he did. And it was just a case where I think when you get back there and can knock him around some, you know, a 40-year-old body is just not going to weather the punishment the way a younger person can withstand it. And
yep.
when you get back there opening day and start knocking him down... And he's also just not able. One of the things I noticed is that I think, you know, this is just me speculating, Brady normally gets the ball out fast. It's one of the reasons why he's played as long as he has is because he's
right.
one of those quick release guys who can get the ball out.
Right.
And last night I saw him take more 7-step drops than I am accustomed to seeing out of him. And I almost think it's because they were like, okay, coming off of the Super Bowl, you know, we are going to make a statement. You know, we are going to hit the downfield pass. We traded for Brandon Cooks from the Saints. I'd be interested to get your thoughts on that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we are going to hit home run balls, and we're going to put on a show and announce to the rest of the league that we are here to basically go 16-0. I mean, that was the genuine talk. Is that, you know, a lot of people were just thinking, oh, they got so much better in the offseason. Who can beat the Patriots? You know,
yeah.
they might just go 16-0. And I think they were out to be that team. And I just think that they took – that was a chance because, again, Brady's best game is when he's getting the ball out fast, especially to those little slot receiver guys who run around like monkeys and you know, the who was the guy that got the ACL Julian Edelman. Yeah. I mean,
good player.
You know, yeah, he's a good player. He's basically the latest version of Wes Welker, as we know.
Right. Right.
And, you know, Welker's quickness and ability to turn short passes into long gains was one of the hallmarks of the 2000s Patriots that were, you know, really, really good. And they don't really have that now with Edelman. I mean, Edelman's pretty good in that role, but not Edelman. I'm sorry. What?
Amendola.
Amendola. Danny Amendola. Thank you.
Right.
I don't think that Amendola fits that bill as well, and I think it puts their entire offense in a weird place because they don't have the ability. I mean, a lot of teams would like to do what the Patriots have done with that position, but it's hard to find those slot guys. Yeah. Who are as nimble. And so, you know, that threw them off. But I just think last night they were determined that they were going to hang a bunch of points on this team opening day, make a statement, and they got burned by it because the Chiefs' defensive front is too good, got back there, knocked them down a lot. Next thing you know, they're looking up at the score as opposed to looking down on the team they're beating, you know. And I just think that after that, The stunned looks on the faces of both their sideline and the fans just said it all. They're like, how can this be happening? And one day, it's like everything. One day, that dynasty is going to be over. Is it this year? Maybe not. But as somebody who's tired of the frickin' Patriots, I'd love to see it. I'd love to remember this game as the game that announced that they are sliding back into mediocrity.
I think it's a very good possibility that that's the case. If it's not ended completely, I think it'll be on hold for a year or so. I'll say this about it. I will forever be in their debt, meaning the New England Patriots, for not having to watch the goddamn Atlanta Falcons win a Super Bowl.
It's going to happen at some point, man.
Not for a while. Now that's been put to rest for quite some time. It would be the equivalent of the Fudge Packers blowing somebody out in the Super Bowl, and you're like, of course, the difference is you've had to put up with it before.
Yes.
Let's say you never had though, and you hated the Packers anyway, and then you got, oh my God, I can't watch this. I can't believe, and then somebody beats them and keeps them from. The team you hate the most from having any bit of glory whatsoever in their entire history, then it's sweet as can be. Because I never had a dog in the hunt with the Patriots. I respect them in a lot of ways. I love watching the Super Bowl no matter who's playing it and hope for a good game. I was pretty sure that because there was nobody, and I mean no one, who was going to hear it worse than Saints fans if those bitches had beaten the not just beaten the Patriots to badly.
Right.
In the Super Bowl.
Right.
And no, I can't take it. I was like, oh my God, I can't watch. We were in New Orleans anyway, and in the surrounding areas. I was at my nephew's house. The party started out, and he has like a pretty big, really nice house. So I had 30, 40 people there. You know, different. Everybody's watching the game in different areas of the house. Well, by the time, early fourth quarter rolled around, there were about 8 of us. Everybody's like, we're going home. This is garbage. And I'm sitting there going, I can't. We're all, the few of us there, we're the hardcore. My nephew, a couple of his friends, you know, a couple of people, we always watch the away games there.
Right.
And I'm like, we're sitting there going, I can't believe the fucking Atlanta Falcons have won the fucking Super Bowl. I can't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. I'm about to throw up. No, we can't have. Because, again, I understand if the Fudge Packers did it again, you wouldn't like it. But you've seen it a million times. You're like, well, and they're good. I mean, suck or not, they're good enough where you wouldn't be surprised. You wouldn't like it.
Sure.
We're sitting there going, fucking Falcons. No, we can't. No. Even though we've won one, we can't. No, this cannot be happening. So we got not just, and again, remember your hatred of the Packers to relate. Not only did we not get to have to endure that, we got to watch them make the biggest choke, arguably, and I would argue, the biggest choke job in the history of maybe of all of sports. Forget football. If there's a bigger one in all of sports, I want to know about it.
It's
football. I'm talking about NFL history, almost 100 years. I don't know if there's a bigger one.
You know, the only thing that comes to mind was the Houston Oilers letting Frank Reich come back with the Buffalo Bills. But, I mean, that wasn't even the Super Bowl. That was just
a place-up game. You're right. But this is worse because – not because it's a bigger deficit, because of – I mean, anyone ever tells you, look, dude, 11-something minutes and we got – 11 minutes and it's 28-3. We got it. We got
right.
this. You would have to be the worst, most garbage team in the world to blow that lead. I'm sorry. I can't think of anything close. in football because, you know, the Oilers weren't a garbage team. It got kind of out of control.
Right.
They, you know,
well, it was unprecedented in Super Bowl history, that comeback. I mean, there's no getting around that. Teams normally, when they're down like that, they just don't come back. And it was amazing. Again, like you said, especially just from a standpoint of coaching, from a certain point forward, you can protect your lead in such a way that even if you just win by 1 point, you still, you've still won the game. And they just blew it, you know. So, but
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I understand where you're coming from when the Packers won their Super Bowl in 2010, you know, they went through the Bears to do it. And they, that was the infamous game where Jay Cutler injured his knee and everybody saw him standing on the sidelines and riding the stationary bike and wondering, well, why isn't he getting back in there and playing? And, you know, he had a torn MCL, so he just wasn't good to go. But the Bears had won the division. The Packers were in Chicago for the championship game. And, you know, the last thing you want to do is lose the chance to go to the Super Bowl to your division, your hated division rival.
Sure.
And, you know, lose it in such a way that, you know, it just adds – it, you know, adds a special layer of humiliation to the whole process. But that was the same year, tragically. See, I went to watch that Super Bowl, and the problem was that Ben Roethlisberger had gotten into trouble here in Georgia. We don't know that he raped that girl, but the way the NFL approached it and suspended him, it looks like they uncovered some things and payoffs and so forth that just leads you to suspect, probably. And so – the problem was that I was the only person there rooting against the Packers because especially the women there were rooting against the Steelers because they hated Roethlisberger. So I was kind of feeling awfully lonely in that I'm like, look, I don't like what he probably allegedly did any more than you do, but this is the Packers. Okay, I cannot root for them. They can be playing Satan himself, and I cannot root for them. I maybe there are circumstances under which I could root for the Packers, but I'm drawing a blank right now as to what they would be. Okay,
no.
And frankly, in my division, I mean, I understand the Falcons and the Saints. I don't really understand when and how that acrimony arose, except for it was around the time that, as I recall. What's his name? Morton Anderson.
No,
left the team. But it must have been before that.
1978.
Okay.
I'll briefly go into it, then we'll move on to our teams. 1978, little Saints Falcons history here, because before that, my hated team was the Rams. And the 49ers were garbage in the 70s. The Rams were actually a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
Falcons stunk, Saints stunk. And the team that used to hand us our asses and make us sick all the time was the Rams. I hated the Rams. It was my hated team. Falcons, I didn't care. They were bums like we were, you know?
Right.
Well, 1978, we finally put together one of our best teams ever. I'm talking the one of our best offenses ever for sure with Archie Manning in his prime, Tony Galbraith and Chuck Muncey and Wes Chandler. Well, he was like a year away. I'm sorry. Ike Harris, though. We had Henry Childs. We had a really good offense. Well, early in the season, the Falcons came in, and we had them beaten, and then they threw Steve Butkowski throws a big bomb in the end zone, beats us 20-17 in the last second play. So then we go to the Georgia Dome or whatever it was, Fulton County Stadium back then.
Fulton County Stadium, yes.
Right, and so same exact circumstances, last end of the game, last second, Hail Mary, 20-17 again, identical scores. And that game cost us our playoffs, our slim playoff chances. So we opened early in the next year. We're back in the dome. We have them almost beat, but we get put into overtime. Russell Erksleben drops back into the end zone. There's a bad punt. He picks up the ball in the end zone, throws an interception, game over. We lost that one again. In other words, we just had these crazy, fluky losses, and we just started really hating the Falcons for some reason. That's what really kicked it off. From then on, it became, because we were pretty much came into the league at the same time, and we, no matter how bad either team were it was at any given time, the games were always close, always brutal, and the teams just didn't like each other. It just started kind of – so
sure.
Everyone, all these storied franchises, the Bears would be one, the Packers would be another, the Giants, Eagles, those are teams with legitimate historical NFL rivalries. There's no question about it. But the local rivalries like this one only matters to the local team. Saints and Falcons are actually, as far as fans, they travel here in droves. I mean, in other words, it's close enough. Thousands
yes.
of them come here. Thousands of us go there. And it's a very friendly but contentious. In other words, it's kind of it's almost like a good-natured rivalry.
Right.
We hate each other in that sense, but we're also we get along. We're hospitable to each other, and it's kind of a very – again, it's pretty amiable, really, because I've been to a Falcons game in Atlanta, and they were really cool there, and we're
right.
nice to them. But believe me, we're brutal to each other. And if they came down here with that Super Bowl win, see, we didn't beat them in a Super Bowl. They would have nothing to do with us winning the Super Bowl or losing one. If they came down here, oh my God, and they started strutting around with a Super Bowl win, well, I can only imagine what that Falcons game here, and it's going to be late in the season, is going to be like for them, their fans. It's going to be rough, is all I can tell you.
Right.
So, but anyway, we only have this is only an hour show tonight, so
yeah.
We'll get on to a little bit of business here. Now, we'll talk a little bit of the rest of the NFL, but anyone that's happening to hear us for the first time, and basically Michael and I just want to do a little bit of catching up, and I guess our way of doing it was catching up on the last big game played, really, not just Thursday night's game, but of course, the Super Bowl, you know, kind of where we both stand on that. Michael is a lifelong Chicago Bears fan and therefore, rightly so, hates the Green Bay Fudge Packers.
Yeah.
And now you all now know how I feel about the Atlanta Falcons.
Right.
So, that being said, we're also very – both of us, Michael and I, are both – and we're both Michaels, incidentally. We are football – what I like to call football realists. I mean, I want my team to win, and I go nuts when my team wins, and you do too. But I've never been the kind of fan, and you haven't either. You haven't either. But there's some people who cannot speak in realistic terms about their team. If their team sucks, they can't admit it.
Right.
If they won't speak critically of their team. Well, not here.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't like it, but if it's a truth to be spoken about our team, we'll do it. And but right now this is just week one, so we don't have to go in other than with expectations, whether they are low or not, we don't know. You never really know. There are a lot of questions going in. As a New Orleans Saints fan, I can only tell you that right now, I'm really taking this on a game by game basis, because we're a relatively mysterious football team. You're never completely mysterious when you got a guy like Drew Brees, though.
Right.
In spite of some of his personnel being gone, and you touched on Brandon Cooks. I thought Brandon Cooks looks pretty lost in that. He looked pretty lost in that Patriots offense the other night, but
yes.
That doesn't mean anything. It's just one game. I hated losing him though. Like I hated losing him a lot. He was a very key component to our offense. The fact that Willie Snead, who was also very important, is suspended really pisses me off, because he's been a dynamic young receiver for us as well.
Right.
So Drew's playing without some weapons this week.
Right. Of course, this is Drew Brees. He can make good receivers out of average receivers.
He will do that. And we have a really wonderful draft pick from last year that is really – Michael Thomas is very, very promising, and we're hoping he's going to have to step up and have a great game. Kobe Fleener had a very weak season last year, a very mediocre one. We're hoping he picks it up. I like Josh Hill, the other tight end. But at wide receiver, you know, other than again, Willie Steen's not playing. We got Michael Thomas. We don't have a whole lot of wide receiver right now, to be honest. We don't have a whole lot of a roster at wide receiver. but I'm thinking, and we're hoping to see an excellent game out of Adrian Peterson against his old team. Now, that could be something, you know, that could be helpful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
You know, the thing about when I think about them signing Adrian Peterson, I was talking with another Saints fan friend, and his reaction to the signing was, it's great. Can he play defense? And that's what I understand. That's a not inconsiderable concern on the part of Saints Nation is the state of the defense right now, because that seems to be one of the places where if they could use some bolstering, you know, to go along with a potentially dynamic offense, the defense appears to, you know, to many fans appear to be a question mark. So, you know, how would you rate things on that score? I'm curious as to, you know, what they might have addressed in the draft and that kind of thing.
I'm cautiously optimistic about some of the moves we've made on defense. However, Stephon Anthony, one of our promising young linebackers, is out for this game tomorrow. That's not good. Overall, I like our picks in the draft a lot, but those are draft picks. So.
Oh, sure.
We made a couple of moves in the offseason. Put it this way, there's no way we will not have improved. We're just going to have to wait to see to the degree over the first couple of games, because I'm not really sure. We've got some good prospects in there, so good players, but they're just going to. This is a very new defense, and you can't really take much away from preseason. But I will tell you that preseason, they gelled way better together than I've seen them in a long time. And again, you're not playing against teams' best. You're not playing against teams. You know, you're playing against teams running vanilla schemes and all that other kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So all I can say is I'm cautiously optimistic about the defense. Michael, when you have it, this is just one of the most phenomenal statistics ever for me.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, the Saints averaged something like 29 points a game and still only won 7 games.
Right.
That's a bad defense.
That's a sign.
That's
yes.
Insanity. That's insanity.
Yeah. That's a sign that a team needs to go all out to shore up the defense, because the offense is getting it done.
We got a really good front seven now. Actually, believe it or not, you know, again, so this is going to be largely on what happens in our secondary. Kenny Vaccaro's, you know, hopefully he's back playing well. Jarris Burt sucks. I hope he's out of there. We've had so many guys in and out of there right now over the past year or two. I don't know, man. It's up in the air.
Right.
Really, it doesn't help that we're going against a pretty good team.
Yeah, I mean that's the hard part. The Vikings, you know, it's funny as division rivals go. I never even used to think about hating other teams in terms of division rivalries the way you always have, because by and large, the NFC North, with the exception of when the Bears broke out in the mid 80s, NFC North was such an back then the NFC Central, it was such an afterthought, and it was just such an exercise in futility for practically any team, which included at the time the Bucks, to come out of there and be any kind of playoff threat, that it was just easier to say hate the Cowboys, for example, because
right.
they were constantly good, you know, and I had to find other teams to kind of follow just if I wanted to have any kind of satisfaction going into the postseason and maybe in the Super Bowl. It helped that my mom is a big Skins fan. So, you know, they did well for themselves in the 80s and even a little bit in the 90s there. You know, it didn't hurt, you know, before, you know, the Bears at least broke out for a couple of years there anyway. But I didn't hate the Packers. I didn't hate the Vikings or the Bucks or the Lions. You know, it sucked when we lost to them. But especially because, you see, the difference is also that you've always lived in a TV market where you got to watch your team every week. I was one of those football fans who had to get glimpses of his favorite team through highlights and through bits and pieces on sports shows, because, you know, it was rare when the Bears got carried in, you know, South Mississippi in any of
right.
the games that they had. So, you know, it was obviously a lot more – upfront and in your face for you and for the Saints Nation, you know. Anybody prior to the advent of NFL Sunday Ticket, you know, was pretty much screwed as far as watching their teams. There was a period there where you could go to sports bars and they would have it on satellite.
Right.
But, I didn't even discover that until the 90s. So basically, I didn't get to really follow my team the way I wish I had been able to. Then again, I might be even more depressed and dour than I am today, you know, given that, basically through the 70s and 80s, you know, they had Walter Payton. I mean, that's really what
right,
they had.
Yeah.
You know, sure, they had some good guys on defense, but overall, they just didn't have a team that was going to threaten anybody for a deep postseason run, you know. And if they won the division, it was because everybody else just kind of sucked, you know.
Right.
So it was a very different kind of feel. So when I talk about the Vikings here, I feel in some ways like on the one hand, I'm catching up to where you are in the sense of hating a division rival, but that's mostly because,
yeah,
you know, there's the one team in particular that has been picking on us like the bully on the playground, you know, and that's the Packers.
Sure, sure.
And one of the reasons why I don't hate the Vikings is because of all the teams that has been able to give the Packers trouble during both the Brett Favre years and the Aaron Rodgers years, it's the Vikings. You know, the Lions generally haven't posed much of a threat to them. Even when they should beat the Packers, they don't. You know, they're just pathetic, you know. But the Vikings have a very, very good defense this year. I'm hoping the Bears defense will be on par with them. But they have just one of the defenses to account for in the league. There aren't that many. The Texans are probably, if not
the
best,
they're very good.
As good as any. Yes. The Vikings are very good on defense. They have a pass rush. They can stop the run. They are good in the secondary. I mean, there aren't many really what you would say areas that you can exploit. Now, still a good to great quarterback, and Drew Brees is a great quarterback, can still find, you know, gaps and holes and ways to move the ball. And so that's going to be one of the key things is if he can do that, if the Saints offensive line is going to give him the time he needs to get the ball to the right guys. With a diminished wide receiver core, makes it tougher. So it's a home game for the Vikings. And like I said, the Vikes are very good on defense and decent on offense, even with Captain Checkdown, you know, Sam Bradford throwing the ball. But, you know, that's going to be the difficulty. And if the Vikings get something going on offense and their defense plays as well as I suspect they can play, it's going to be tough. You know, that's all I can say. It's going to be tough.
Well, we run a base 4-3, and I'm looking at us right now. We, you know, Cam Jordan, Sheldon Rankins, you know, those two, and actually this guy Okafor, that's a solid defense, you know, defensive front. This kid Davison, I'm not too sure about. But like I said, we actually have a really good front four right there. Linebacker right now Stephen Anthony hurts to lose him, but Manti Te'o actually filling in for me. He's not that bad. But again, you got this. I don't know. Again, these other guys are just Robertson and Klein. We probably haven't heard of them. No one has. I mean, we have a no name. You know, a cornerbacks Lattimore and Williams. Again, these are young guys that are improving. We're starting a rookie cornerback. Kenny Vaccaro's there. I like this kid Von Bell. We got a couple other guys that can play. Sterling Moore, Delvin Bro's already put back to number three in the cornerback roster. So I look at it and I go, I don't know. I can't name you other than maybe Cameron Jordan, a standout possible Pro Bowl type player on that defense.
Right.
And Kenny Vaccaro maybe, but you know. So it's going to be offense. These guys have just got to play. All they've got to do is make a few plays. And I look at what we're starting on offense tomorrow. I mean, look, dude, this is Breeze. Yeah, Ingram. And, you know, Ingram's starting, by the way. But, I mean, Peterson will play. No question about it.
Sure.
Oh, here we go. Here's our wide receivers, man. Look, Ted Ginn Jr. Yes, don't ask me why. Sneed's out. This little kid, Lewis, that looked pretty good in the preseason. They had to bring him in. Fleener and Hill. Fleener needs to pick it up because he was a good player at Indianapolis, but I don't know about here. So it's good. This is really going to be on Michael Thomas because Brandon Coleman has never shown me that he could catch a cold.
Right.
So it's going to be on them. We've lost Teron Armstead, who's our left tackle. He's out. Oh, God. I think it was him. Let me see. Make sure. Yeah. Armstead's out. I'm really not sure who we're going to start. They say we're starting him, but I think we've got Ramsey coming here. That scares the shit out of me at left tackle.
Right, right.
With Armstead out, I mean, when your left tackle's out, and he never really, I don't know. He's the best we've got.
Right.
So, I don't know. Vikings could have a serious field day on us.
Well, not to, I mean, again, I'll be rooting for the Saints. I mean, like I said, I don't hate the Vikings, but the Saints are one of the teams I root for, period. I mean,
well, appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I like them, and they're sort of like my, there's a cluster of four teams in the NFC that, I say four, it's the Bears, the Saints, Skins, depending on my mood, alternately one or two others maybe. But those are my big teams that I pull for in the NFC for the most part, that I want to see succeed and you know, if teams are going to win in the NFC, those tend to be the ones I'll pull for. AFC, it's, you know, kind of a mixed bag. Not too passionate about the AFC for the most part. So I want the Saints to be a good team, and I want them to win. But just from a standpoint of our pick'em, you know, I think that Minnesota, like you said, between the injuries the Saints are dealing with, the uncertainty at several positions.
Well,
I mean, I could say this. I mean, if I were talking about the Bears, I'd be listing a lot of the same concerns, which is why I didn't pick them to win this week either.
But
you know, it's going to depend. I mean, this is the first week, and the first week can be wild, and you can find out that people are better than you thought, worse than you thought. So a lot of stuff starts to gel after this first week. So, you know, there are some games that you figure are easy to pick, and some games you're just like, well, a lot depends on this, that, the other. So,
go ahead and talk the Bears a little bit because we've got a few minutes before we have to do our pick segment. Next week, we'll devote more time to both because we spent like most of talking about that Super Bowl, but you know, which was fair enough.
Sure.
But talk a little about who the Bears playing and talk a little bit about that game, and then we'll do our picks in a few minutes, 10 minutes, about 5 minutes.
Absolutely. Well, I think that the Bears this week are playing a contender to win the NFC and represent their conference in the Super Bowl again. They're playing the Atlanta Falcons.
And
so you've got a reason. If you normally don't even pay attention to the Bears, you might root for them tomorrow.
I'll root for them even more. I'll root for them for you anyway. So,
yeah,
but it's been more so now.
I'm just saying. It's one of those cases where a similar Falcons team. Okay, first, I picked the Falcons like 99% of the people did because there's so much uncertainty with the Bears, and I'll cover that in a second. But you know, the fact is that a similar Falcons team with a lot of the same offensive talent, Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, came into Chicago a couple of seasons ago on a season opener and got beat. And it's one of those teams that even though I think they are a top franchise right now, you just feel like there are certain teams that can play certain other teams well. You know, even weirdly, when the personnel changes, you know, it's just one of those things where sometimes you feel like a franchise kind of has the number of another franchise, and it's hard to quantify. But, you know, there are years, of course, where that's just not true and you get thumped. But what can you do? But, yeah, we play the Falcons. And everything is going to depend on, a bunch of uncertainty. I'll say this. The Bears have been rebuilding.
There's no secret about that. When you go 3-13 after you've torn up the team, and that started the year before, actually, when they went like 4-12 or 5-11, I forget which. You know, it's pretty obvious you're trying to clean up the mess from a previous regime. And that's what happened. I mean, the personnel guy, he had made some okay draft moves, but by and large, he completely whiffed on the coach, Mark Trestman. He basically brought in a CFL guy who, basically, when you picture Ned Flanders as a head coach, that was Trestman. And I respect a nice guy, don't get me wrong, but they were replacing Lovie Smith, and that was the big first problem, is that so many of those remaining players were what you call Lovie guys. They loved Lovie Smith. Lovie was a player's coach all the way. And the problem with player's coaches is that sometimes you wind up playing guys who are kind of past their sell-by date. And in many cases, they aren't as hard on the players and don't push them like they ought to. But those players so resented this new coach coming in, even though they went 8-8 in the first year that Trestman was there and showed some signs of life on offense anytime Jay Cutler got hurt anyway, it was still a case where they were resistant. You know, they just didn't want – and that drives me nuts, Mike. That drives me crazy when paid professional athletes – and this is not the first time this has happened. I know that. But when paid professional athletes so resent a change in management, a change at the coach position, that they would even think about, I don't want to say gold bricking exactly, but it creeps into their play. That attitude just kind of creeps into their effectiveness and their buy-in, as the saying goes. So they just didn't feel like they were really given everything they had. And, of course, you also had a lot of veterans, a lot of aging veterans, a lot of questionable free agent signings on the part of the previous personnel guy. And as a result, the team wound up a mess, a giant mess. And so basically the Bears, after the second season, it was terrible. The second season, they just got blown out time and time again. Patriots, Packers, you name it. They just were just getting shelled. And it was embarrassing. So the Bears brass knew this isn't working. We got to get rid of both the personnel guy and the coach. And so they brought in from New Orleans Ryan Pace, and he's a young guy. He had demonstrated his work ethic and his acumen on the pro personnel side. So, you know, it was an interesting hire. You're always kind of cautious when a new personnel, especially because, I mean, talent is so important in the league. I mean, you can get by with a certain amount of coaching genius, but after a certain point, you just have to have difference makers and you have to draft and develop those guys. So that was one of the things that you're a little bit leery of, is that, okay, this guy is a pro personnel guy. I know he's going to hire scouts. I know he's going to hire college talent evaluators, but you know, we don't want to be one of those teams that, like, remember the Eagles dream team, quote unquote, that crashed and burned. You know, they had signed all these free agents, like Dan Snyder with the Skins does every year. Every year, but he used to, especially just throw money at free agents, buy all the best guys, and watch as your team goes into salary cap hell and fades and does not win. And that's what I was afraid they were going to do, but they have not done that. They have become a draft and develop sort of team. So in that respect, I'm a lot more optimistic than I would have been had they gone with somebody with maybe a different approach to building a team. And in particular, the strength of this team right now is in its defensive front seven. They have an excellent front seven right now, at least as far as past performance is concerned. The guys that are coming back from injury and the guys that they have acquired, it looks like they've got a chance to be something special on the front seven. They even extended a guy who has been central to their resurgence, at least along the defensive line. They shifted from a 4-3 to a 3-4. And one of the guys, Akeem Hicks, just today got a 4-year contract extension, and he has played for every bit of the money he's going to be making. I was really pleased to see that.
They've got excellent nose tackle. They've got a couple of guys who are really turning it on, younger guys who they've been developing at the other defensive end position. So the front three look great. And this is a player to watch for, Leonard Floyd. He's a guy we drafted out of Georgia at outside linebacker as a pass rusher. And he is he's already showing flashes. He's had a couple of concussions. And he's the Bears last year were the most injured team in the league, contributed directly to that record. They probably would have won some more games, if, you know, and not been a 3-13 laughing stock. But people forget that. They had one of those years that every team goes through from time to time where just too many people wind up on injured reserve, and they just had no continuity in certain areas. But Leonard Floyd, if he stays healthy this year, he is going to have a double-digit sack season, and he is going to be looked at as one of the league's premier pass rushers. I firmly believe that. There was a play in their preseason game with the Broncos where he showed he's back, and that was where on the first play from scrimmage for the Broncos, Leonard Floyd turned on the Jets, did that nifty shoulder tuck under move under the tackle, under the right tackle, and just buried Trevor Siemian, just crushed him. And I was like, man, and you know, he didn't play a lot more after that, but I was like, that kind of talent, that kind of, you know, they, you know, that bend and that burst, those things they talk about when, you know, they talk about edge rushers, he's got it all.
Right.
And I think that he has a very good chance of being one of their breakout players. So I'm confident in the defensive front seven. The back four, the defensive backfield, is all new. I have no idea what to expect out of it because they've got the chance to be good because they picked up some good players. One's a draft pick, Eddie Jackson out of Alabama, displaced Adrian Amos at one of the safety, at the free safety position. And they picked up Deion Sims, who was excellent veteran safety for the Texans. So I think that that's going to be improved. The problem is they've got a great offensive line, terrific offensive line, and they've got Jordan Howard, who if he had played in the first three games before Jeremy Langford got hurt, probably would have led the league in rushing instead of Ezekiel Elliott. And that's saying something because Jordan Howard finished second, had a brilliant year. He is an excellent running back. The problem is the wide receivers. You know, you've not only got Mike Glennon, who is a placeholder until Mitch Trubisky can start, but the wide receivers are a grab bag. And saying we don't know what we've got is an understatement, coupled with the fact that the guy who was pegged as the number one guy tore his ACL in the preseason. So we are in a very similar boat as far as you guys are, except for you do have Michael Thomas as a number one. At least you've got that much. We don't know what we've got. So I'm just saying that it's going to be one of those cases where the Bears could surprise a lot of people. I hope they do. I hope that we're right, that we have a good feeling about at least parts of this team, that we can at least get close to 500. But so much of it is just going to depend on, you know, how these guys develop and how the chemistry evolves and whether or not Mike Glennon shits the bed early or actually plays decent football. You know, because Mitch Trubisky is the number two now. He's not even third string. He's been elevated to backup. If Glennon shits the bed or gets hurt, then Mr. Biscuit, that's his nickname. Mr. Biscuit.
Biscuit
is coming in. Mitchell.
Hell yeah. Mitchell. We'll be able to say Mitchell a lot. Let's pick some games with the remaining time. I think hopefully it won't cut out on us. We got like 2 minutes of stream time, but hopefully it'll record us. We'll see. We'll do it as long as it'll let us. We'll go quick on each game. All right, Jets at Bills.
Jets at Bills, I've got Buffalo.
All right,
I don't think I'll be picking the Jets this year.
Me too. I'll agree with you on that one. Eagles at Redskins.
Eagles, Redskins, I've got the Eagles.
Agreed again. All righty, Raiders at Titans.
I got the Raiders.
Again, we agree, sir.
Yes, sir.
We're agreeable. Jags at Texans.
I got the Texans.
I'm going to go with the Jags myself.
Go ahead.
I don't know why.
I just think the Texans I think the Texans defense is gonna control that game.
Weird feeling on them Jags this year for some reason. Those tricky Jags.
Blake Bortles.
A guy named Bortles. Cardinals at Lions.
Cardinals. Lions, I think, are just too enigmatic. I think the Cardinals have a solid team both sides of the ball.
Cards agreed. Let's see. All right, I'll check my – I don't think we're still being almost – all right, we'll see. We'll just keep going and fly as long as we can.
Atlanta, Chicago?
Where are we at now? Steelers, Browns.
You know, that game picks itself. I think the Steelers.
I hate to say it.
Steelers are going to steamroll the mistake by the lake.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's really not much. The Falcons, pieces of crap, garbage, filthy, maggot-infested, I should say. Let's not forget maggot-infested Falcons at the Bears.
Yeah, I got the Falcons. I desperately hope they surprise everybody.
I didn't do this because of you. I actually am picking the Bears.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully.
I believe the Falcons, not because I know a whole lot about the Bears, mind you, other than what you tell me.
Yeah.
believe the Falcons are going to come out stumbling. I mean, that's a team that, let me tell you, they're historically, when they have a great year, and last year, other than that horrible debacle that happened to them in the Super Bowl, when they have a super stupendous year of whatever sorts, I mean, whether it's like they made the playoffs or they got, you know, whatever it is, they rarely, and I mean rarely, are they strong the following year.
Right.
It's very rare. So there. Let's see. Right. All right. So, the Ravens at the Bengals.
Yeah, I'm picking Cincinnati. Joe Flacco is didn't get to practice all preseason because of a bad back, and he's taken that bad back into the game. And the Falcons, not the Falcons, the Ravens. I don't think that they are anything like the very good teams we've had in the past. So yeah, I'm going with Cincy.
Agreed again. Agreed. Colts, the Dolts at the Rams, the LA Rams.
With Luck out, and I have never been a big especially given his uneven performance since he's been drafted. I understand that they haven't always put good players around him, but he's just never presented as an exceptional quarterback. So and now he's out. You know, now he's hurt. And the Rams have a very good defense, and the Colts, I think, are playing Scott Tolzien. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? That guy still has a job. So,
how is Scott Tolzien still in the league?
I don't know. I mean, I guess if you just look the part, somebody's going to hire you. And so,
this is not Curtis Painter, dude.
Yeah, I know. The Rams are not any kind of good, but they're probably going to be a lot better than the Colts. So I think the Rams. Yeah.
Thank you. Got to lose.
Yeah.
the piss bag crap hole Panthers. That's their actual real name. A lot of people don't know that.
Oh,
again,
okay.
At the 69ers.
Yeah, I think Carolina's set for a rebound year. I think they're going to be pretty good. And San Francisco, well, they're rebuilding and they kind of suck. So I think that's kind of an easy pick.
I'm not sure they're going to be Panthers will be that good this year, but they're going to win this one.
Yeah.
The Sea Squawks at the lovely Fudge Packers of your favorite.
Yeah, I'm picking Green Bay because Green Bay's at home, and Green Bay's not invincible at home, but they have beaten the Seahawks the last couple of times they played them at home. And to be blunt about it, the Seahawks have an excellent defense, and that's not nothing. You know, a great defense can shut Rodgers down, and that's happened in the past. It just depends on whether or not they're going to step up in the opening game of the season and do that. But just in terms of, the home field advantage coupled with the fact that, Russell Wilson, he ain't any kind of elite quarterback, you know. He just is not. And just from a standpoint of who's going to have the advantage, at least early in the year, I think that the Packers will. Although I agree also with people who are saying the Seahawks look like they're also going to be contenders down the line, you know, for the NFC Championship. So it's a good time to catch the Seahawks, I think, especially if you're also a good team like the Packers.
Agree on that one as well. The Giants tomorrow night at the Cowboys.
Let's see. I have the Cowboys. I might not have gone with the Cowboys if Elliott had if his suspension had kicked in. Not that Elliott is
much more than the beneficiary of an outstanding offensive line, probably
right.
the best line in football right now, or at least it was. They've had some shakeup there. But, you know, he just adds to it. Conversely, you know, Eli Manning is just one of those quarterbacks. You're never quite sure what you're going to get from game to game. And sometimes he can just play lights out, and sometimes he's throwing wounded ducks around the field, and you're wondering, my God, you know, is this the same guy? So just given that uncertainty. Now, the Giants did beat the Cowboys. I think they swept them last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is hardly certain. But, yeah, I think that probably the Cowboys, probably.
I hear you. I got the Giants. I almost went with the Cowboys. And I think you were kind of talking about, they just seem to have the Cowboys number all the time. I don't know what it is. And
it helps to go in against a divisional rival, and whereas another team might be intimidated or you know, have some kind of hesitation, you know, whenever it's a division rival, it's kind of like two boxers who know one another, you know,
right.
That's not going to be an issue when it comes time to throwing punches, you know?
Yepper. My eights at the Vikings.
Yeah, I'm going to be rooting for the Saints. I think the Vikings have a little bit of an advantage. When some of your boys come back from suspension and injury, things might be different.
Yeah,
you know, right now I think the Vikings have the advantage at home.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm actually picking the Saints, and not because of homerism either. I think somehow they'll go there because of its opening night, and I think opening day to me, opening night, whatever you want to call it.
Yep, yep.
Never, ever, ever. I never feel comfortable about characteristics of teams
right.
on the first couple of, especially the first game and even the second or third. I always feel like on opening one day or two, I can go out on a limb on some teams. Some I can't. I mean, let's for example, like we talked about, the Colts
right.
are garbage.
Yeah.
You know, the Jets are garbage. It doesn't
right.
matter whether it's open or not. Okay, they're trash.
Yeah. Right.
You know when a team's absolute garbage. But we're good enough to win. It doesn't mean we're gonna. And so I would go, yeah, I think I'm gonna go because here's another silly reason why. Because we rarely win opening games.
Right.
And we
right.
rarely win on the road in opening games. So I just see us once in a while something has to give. And I think maybe Peterson can go off on his old team and make some plays. And again, it's just a hard thing, I admit it, but I also think there's some it's a very big possibility. You're probably
yeah.
right. I just talked myself out. We're going to lose. Oh, and I'm picking us anyway.
Okay.
Don't worry. Hey, I'll pick against us all day long when I really think we're going to lose.
It's not like there's money on the line, so I should probably be bolder, but hell, who cares?
No, I hear you. You're probably right. The Chargers, the Los Angeles.
Yeah.
The Los Angeles, which they were for 1 year in their first –
Yep.
First year of their existence. Los Angeles Chargers at the Broncos.
I've got Denver. I think Denver's defense is tough.
Yeah,
early in the season, I tend to go with teams that have identifiably good defenses,
yep.
and that makes up a lot for a lot when your offense is still trying to figure itself out. But in terms of this game, Chargers, I like Phillip Rivers. He's been one of the upper-tier quarterbacks of the league. I'm a little surprised he hasn't been able to win more, especially in the postseason for the Chargers. But then again, this is the Spanos organization, and they have proven themselves to be consistently inept. And just about the only good thing they ever did was getting Phillip Rivers in there. And, you know, Antonio Gates, back when he was good. But for some
yeah.
reason... They just find a way to screw up good things. You know, it's like, you know, they could screw up the letters to Penthouse. Okay, I mean, one of those scenarios. Seriously,
yeah, yep.
They're that. Just in terms of, there's a kind of a combination of ineptitude and arrogance that flows from the top of that organization. It'd be different. I don't get that same sense of arrogance. In terms of the ownership and the personnel side from, say, the Browns or some of these other consistently bad teams. But the Chargers kind of seem to have this attitude or this air of we're a winning organization, even though they're not. and anybody who challenges them, you know, just, you know, how dare you? It's weird. And and you see it in the way they negotiate these contracts. I mean,
right.
There was no way, for example, Joey Bosa should have been a holdout as long as he was, but they were screwing with him and that offset language stuff that they put into rookie contracts in terms of when you get paid your guaranteed money. And, you know, they had all the leverage, so eventually Bosa did finally come in. But it's stuff like that. You know, they have had multiple players over the years that they have screwed over or done this kind of thing to. And, you know, it just kind of reeks of an organizational dysfunction that even they're not aware of, you know. So
yep.
that's all I can say about the Chargers. And the hell of it all is that I've always been kind of partial to the Chargers just because, you know, the whole kind of the Southern California, I guess you'd say, not myth exactly, or it's more like a kind of like when you're watching the Rose Bowl and it's coming from Pasadena, California, and it's mm-hmm. early, like in January, and it's nice and warm out there where you may be cold wherever you're living. There's just, you know, it's got that mystique, if you will. And so I've always kind of like the Chargers. That's also a holdover from the fact that I was kind of a fan back when Dan Fouts and Winslow and people like
Eric,
that were for him.
Eric Coryell.
Yes, Eric Coryell. I mean, he was just one of those guys who was, you know, he liked to throw the ball downfield. He liked to have his players, you know, make the big plays and things like that. And that was just fun. So, you know, I've always had kind of a good feeling toward the Chargers. Not a big fan of the whole shifting franchises thing. You know, I think we could both go on at length about how just shitty it is for these guys to run around to different cities with their hands out. You know, these billionaire owners wanting public funding for stadiums and things like this when, you know, they could fund it themselves. It just feels wrong, you know. But at the same time, you know, it's just I guess it's just a fact of life in the NFL that, you know, if you want a franchise, you got to pony up. So what can you do?
Yeah. I hear you, partner. Well, damn, dude, I appreciate you joining me, man. We'll do it next week as
sure.
well. If you're able, I will of course contact you. We'll do it unless something drastic happens. Same bat time, bat channel.
Yeah, that works
and,
for me.
I have
no pressing obligations. If something comes up, I'll of course let you know. But
okay.
I can foresee reappearing, and we could just make this a rolling thing.
It's been fun, my brother. I appreciate it. Always. Did you go to Dragon Con, by the way, or no?
No, I sat it out because maybe you can disabuse me of this, but I said, you know, I haven't been for a few years, and
right.
it's because it got so damned crowded. I mean, for God's sake, it was I don't want to say bad enough, but it was about at the breaking point to me when they were averaging about 40,000 to 50,000 fans, or at least that's what they reported. But
yeah.
Lately it's been upwards of 80,000. I mean, it's just been shoulder to shoulder, and you have to wait in line to get into some
right.
even obscure panel.
Yeah.
And
yeah, well, I should
probably go down there just to hang with friends and things like that. But, you know, it's just one of those things where after you're done with the parking and you're trying to find your way around and that kind of stuff, it can just be irritating. But speaking of DragonCon, I'm just curious, what do you think it will take logistically for there to be a live showing or live broadcast of Clobber in Time from DragonCon?
I don't think it'll ever be possible.
You don't think
I would never want to do it.
I didn't want to
go this year. I didn't want to. I'm done. I'm sick of cons, to be honest. I went because my lovely lady friend Nicole had got her new Wonder Woman outfit, so she wanted to go, and we went, and we just, you know, it's kind of a road trip of it, and we went and parked somewhere. We went and got a hotel somewhere north of north of Atlanta, and rode an Uber in for a couple. Just went Friday and Saturday night for a little while, so she can run around in the costume. But myself personally, if I have my druthers, I don't want to go to cons anymore, other than if their friend's going to be at it and it's like something close by where I can go for a day maybe.
Right.
Hang
what
out
about,
with friends. So.
Well, what about New Orleans Comic Con? I know that I think the Wizard World did a show there. That you know, you've got more cons now down there in the New Orleans area than we ever used to have. So I assume that you go to at least a couple of those. I know.
Yeah, once in a while, you know, they have like Wizard Con. I go there once a year again because I have some friends. You know, when you get old, dude, most of your friends are married and all this other kind of shit. So they get, you know, you got certain friends that can get a yard pass once a year almost. Really, not even a joke. It really is like once a year for a couple of them. And so go hang out with them at the con a little bit, relive a little old times. Other than that, I don't have a whole lot of interest in, and I don't really like cons. So this for a lot of the reason you just talked about, the crowd. Just stupid. You know, some fucking idiot the other night at Dragon Con, these moron Alabama fans – threw a chair off of the balcony in the Marriott.
I saw the story about that.
10 floors up or something, and ended up, I don't know how it didn't kill this woman and this other person, these people, but that should have killed a lot of people. I mean, that's absolutely horrific.
Did they identify who did that?
I don't know if it's, I was told that they didn't. Then a friend of mine said he saw something where they said it was an Alabama fan. So that could be wrong. He could have been giving me bad information, or it could be wrong. I'm just saying, I guess they found him.
Yeah,
I
hope so. I'll have to look into that because I hope they did, because my God, what a shitty, shitty thing to do.
I mean, other than like if somebody accidentally throw something and it goes over, the only kind of idiot I could think of that would do it on purpose would be some stupid college football fan. Sorry, Stan.
Not
a geek, necessarily.
I just can't say I'm surprised that it was a Bama fan. I'll just say that.
Yeah, let's go ahead and stereotype their asses to hell with it. They don't listen anyway.
Yeah, fuck them.
Threw them.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, dude, I really appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. I think this is a great way to just to be able to chew the fat on
hell
a subject that's near and dear to both our hearts. And I guess we'll have a lot to talk about after week one here, because that'll be when, you know, the rubber will have hit the road and we'll have a little better idea of who what our teams have and what other teams have, too.
Right. We'll basically review our team's games and then talk a little bit about the rest of the league a little bit and then pick games.
Absolutely. Yep. That'll work for me.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, dude. Take care, and we'll talk again.
All of you out there who's listening, thank you much. We appreciate it, and we're out of here.